Welcome to Season 5 of the Big Sci-Fi Podcast with Adina, Brian, Chris, and Steve, the biggest sci-fi podcast in the galaxy. The adventure is just beginning here at the Big Sci-Fi Podcast, and we invite you to come aboard the Starship Tangent. We know you'll enjoy the conversation, the laughter, the banter back and forth, and most of all, friends who love hanging out to talk about all things science fiction. Set your phasers to fun. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Big Sci-Fi Podcast, the show where we have really fun discussions about all things sci-fi. And before I forget, we're part of the Trek Geeks Network, where you can find other really cool Star Trek podcasts, such as the Sci-Fi Sisters. Today, I want to talk about another maybe sci-fi classic, The Last Starfighter. And yes, it's the one where the entire trailer park is strangely invested in this random kid's high score. To help me determine if this is indeed a sci-fi classic are two of my usual co-hosts, Brian Donahue.
Hey, it's Brian from Ohio. Good to be here, everybody.
And Steve Merkin.
Where it is not raining. And believe it or not, I heard on the news yesterday that Los Angeles was the wettest city in the lower 48 with the amount of rainfall we've gotten in this season. This has been crazy wet.
Wow. Yeah. I've been hearing about that. That's insane. Mm-hmm. And Adina, unfortunately, is not here, but she is on her way to the Star Trek cruise. So she's going to report live from that. Hopefully we'll have some updates. And I'm definitely not jealous. I know none of my co-hosts are jealous of her at all.
No,
we definitely do not want to be there right now. but you know what? We have to talk about something that isn't Star Trek this time, although there's some connections.
Oh, yes.
And that
always
is
connections. Always.
Always connections, of course. The Last Starfighter. So now I'm so curious.
Yes.
What did everybody think? Who wants to go first?
I'll let Steve go first.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, well, Steve.
I've been saying this about pretty much every movie we've been watching from the 70s and 80s, and I'm going to say it again.
Once again,
I had to remove my rose-colored glasses.
Yes.
And watch this movie. And, you know, it's exactly as I recalled it was.
Mm.
And it was fun to watch.
Yes, that's what I wanted to hear.
Still the idea of one lone starship winning the battle. It's definitely an 80s film. But you know what? It's still fun. And it's still fantasy. And it's just right up there with Star Wars as being, you know, just enjoyable without really looking for the logic in it.
Yeah, I'd seen this a couple times growing up, Chris, but it has been years since I've seen it, and I remember really enjoying it as a young lad. Mm-hmm. And watching it now, there were some things that surprised me, lot of that it revolves around special effects. But this film has charm.
Mm-hmm.
It has spirit. Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
Good.
And I think we're all
on the same page.
There's some memorable stuff about this film, and it was fun, honestly, to just sit back and chill on my couch while I'm eating lunch and watching this and just laughing at the right places. I'd forgotten about the humor in the film too. So,
oh yeah, yes, definitely.
I smiled all the way through it.
No, when we were done watching, Elaine goes, "What do you know? That was an enjoyable movie." I mean, she remembers seeing it when we saw it in the theater when it first came out. But she goes, "That was fun, more so than some of the other cheesy 70s and 80s movies we've already been watching lately." So yeah, but it was all around a lot of fun.
Yeah, Oh, sorry, Chris. Go ahead, man.
I was going to say that's where I am with the film. Like, I've seen it. I feel like I watch this every, 4 to 5 years. So I think I saw this 5 years ago or watched it 5 years ago, still liked it. All of my feelings are the same. Mm-hmm. I think my issue, I don't know why I didn't pick up on this last time I watched it, but I think my biggest issue or criticism is around the love story. We have to talk about that end, which kind of bothers me. But overall, it's always a fun movie. It just, like, to me, being someone that has spent so many hours of my childhood growing up and playing video games and being told that, oh, you got to pause it, come up for dinner, we're having dinner now. And like, as a kid, when you're in that, like, if you're doing something amazing or you're on a really tough level, you're about to get through, and then your parent says you have to pause, come up for dinner. That's so depressing. So to see, so for me, it's a little bit of like, not wishful, I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but it's just really cool to see that this town's really invested in this kid's high school or this trailer park, that when he's achieving it, everybody's there and watching. And it's like, man, that's every kid's dream. So yeah, overall fun movie. I always enjoy it. I was watching it with Dill and with one of our other friends because she came over for my birthday. Niasha, she loved it. She seemed to really enjoy it. She had it. She thought it was charming. Dill, unfortunately, like saw the beginning, knocked out because she had her bachelorette party the night before.
Oh, wow.
So she was exhausted.
Okay.
And then she woke up, I think, randomly in the middle when they were dealing with the assassin alien. And she's like, what is that? And then she fell asleep again. So,
but, I don't blame her. The movie is,
the movie's not boring, folks. The movie's not boring. She was just boring. Worn out. That's
because she watched Explorers with me. Mm-hmm. So she's been through some pretty bad movies. but yeah, overall, I still like it. A lot of fun.
You know, one thing I liked about it, Chris, too, is the trailer park scenes were charming and cute and poked a little fun, but they didn't really like over stereotype trailer parks and people that live in trailer. Like the people were charming, fun, quirky for sure. You know, I just, you would kind of maybe expect, like we have seen in other films from the 80s, very strong stereotypes that were unfortunate, or we wish maybe they would, you know, have been a little more enlightened in how they portrayed. And I think, you know, it's quirky, but they didn't really poke fun at anybody.
No,
in the trailer park. It was nice.
No, the people that live in the trailer park, this was a real community. I mean, to think that the biggest moment in the trailer park event of an evening is everybody going, what, Alex? He's getting the highest score? Oh, come on, let's all go and watch. I mean, yes, it was adorable. It really was. And everyone in the trailer park had a little bit of an interesting personality, which was really good in the film. And that's what really worked. Yeah. And it did. Yeah. And you know, you're asking, one of the questions you asked, Chris, was, is the plot believable? And the answer to that question is yes, because the individual that just won the Daytona 500, William Byron, learned how to drive a race car by playing video games, by doing it simulators. That's how we got into it. And if you haven't seen the movie Gran Turismo.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly.
That is exactly the story where playing a video game, playing a simulator, got him to become the best there was and made him successful. So I think it's really good. But the problem with something like that is you have to think about poor George Costanza when he had the highest score on his Frogger machine, and then it had to be moved, and he was trying to figure, if I unplug it, I'm going to lose my score, and no one will know. So, you know, you have to live in the moment, and it was very cute that the whole community lived in the moment with this individual.
Yeah, so I agree. I think, to me, it's believable enough that the game was designed to fly like the ship. And I mean, if as soon as you accept it, I think it's one of those.
Yeah,
it's a little bit far fetched, but at the same time, it's no stranger than things that we are, that we've all watched, than other sci-fi movies. And I think it's a cool idea. It's like, yeah, this is it's a clever way of this alien society recruiting people by placing video games on Earth, even though that he's not supposed to do that. And I think you bring up things like Gran Turismo, and you said there was a real race car driver who did this. So, I mean, that's
William Byron, who just won the Daytona 500.
That's pretty cool.
Cut his teeth driving sims.
That's how they train airplane pilots.
Yes. Yeah.
NASA pilots train on computer simulations. So it's not really, it's very easy to think that would be the case.
That's really. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most believable parts of the idea that to recruit and find the best, you have to see if they can do it or not. And that he was rewarded with his success at playing the game. mm-hmm. as opposed to getting tokens at the Chuck E. Cheese or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I want to shift gears because sure. I didn't write this as a question, but I messaged everyone ahead of time about mm-hmm. the special effects. We got to talk about the effects.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Well, how did we all feel about them?
I did not remember them all being like CGI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did not recall that. So I think that says something about a fond memory of this movie, perhaps, or perhaps as a kid and maybe a teenager watching it. It didn't bother me at all, and it was kind of cool. I think this has got to set this film apart from other science fiction of its mm-hmm. era. Because mm-hmm. I don't recall, and I'm not totally fluent on 80s sci-fi, mind you, but I don't remember watching another film where it's all the outer space stuff is CGI like this was. It had to be ahead of its time to a degree.
So where I stand on this is I remember watching it as a kid, liking it a lot, not really caring about the special effects. And then for whatever reason, we watched this in high school in our English class. And I remember being kind of bothered by the special effects, but our teacher was reading the back of the box and was like, wow, this is like, the promotional stuff was like making it a big deal. It's like, this is made by some of the people that do Star Wars. This is the first time we're going full CGI.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was a big deal. Now I enjoy it, even though it's really bad.
And
I enjoy the charm of it.
I will say I was surprised at it doesn't hold up.
No.
The outer space stuff does not hold on, even some of the planet side stuff does not, like the flashing in the police car, you know, that light look mm-hmm. totally CGI.
The stars. But someone pointed out the stars. They're so bright.
Right. Yeah. And I just, I was surprised. That's probably the most surprising part of this film is I didn't realize that the special effects would not hold up. Now, it's different. It's fine. I'm not saying it's bad at all. It's different. It's got a different look and feel to it. And once you just get used to that, you put it aside. It didn't bother me except initially when I went, oh, wow, it's all CGI. Yeah. So it's definitely hasn't aged well as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that it's unique and stands out, though.
Well, and that's the thing. You're absolutely right. You know, when I was watching it again, the same thing I felt about the special effects in space. The spacecraft looked very almost two-dimensional, you know, because they really haven't got the texturing done to where you could be like three-dimensional images. But it did say, I guess I read it on Wikipedia, it said like this and Tron were the very first films to employ computer graphics. And it's funny. I think about it when I saw it in the movie, and maybe on the big screen, it melded better and you didn't really see the seams that you see on your television, because sometimes you can really tell how special effects are kind of dropped in.
Oh, I see.
And but again, considering the year and when it was made,
pretty darn standout. I also got to the point in the film when I went, you know, this is mimicking the video game. So maybe it makes sense that when he's there, it kind of looks a little video game-ish when they're in outer space. Now, where it bothered me the most was when they were inside the asteroid. That's when it was the most painfully obvious. The texture of the asteroid, all that stuff was very smooth. Again. You know, they tried to make it look textured, but it just looked smooth. You know, it wasn't what they can do now to... But that was when it bothered me the most. But once I just got into it, I'm like, yeah, cool, you know?
Yeah, and again, that's the difference between Star Wars, which used models and miniatures and could give you a three-dimensional look from a three-dimensional item.
Yeah.
But again, for what they did and what it was, you know, that was pretty amazing stuff. Pretty amazing stuff by the time.
Yeah, so do you think... Now, this is something I didn't even like put in there, but do you think that if the film didn't have those effects, if they went the practical model way, do you think it would have, like, do you think it would still be considered, because I think it's considered a cult classic. Do you think it still would be fondly remembered, or would it just be another space movie?
It probably would have aged better if they were had used models. I think so. I think it would have aged better, just like Star Wars has aged really, really well, and Star Trek films and other aliens and so on, where they had used real models and gave it a better feel. But again, you know, for what they were doing. And you know what it got me to thinking about when I was watching it?
What?
This is my very first computer video game.
Sky Fox 2.
From 1989.
Oh my gosh.
Folks can't see it, but it used five and a half. And one is if you had three color VGA or 16 color VGA. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it going, if you look at the graphics on the back, it reminds me of what he was, you know, his heads up display and all that. So, I mean, and this was advanced. So
that box, that cover and cardboard, it's not quite as big as a record.
Yeah.
But it's very close.
But it's
an incredible box for that.
Can I rant for a second? One of my childhood memories and frustrations being a dumb kid. So growing up, I had the NES and I had The Last Starfighter.
Oh, really?
And so I played that before I saw the movie. Then I think one day we were at a Blockbuster or something, and I guess I saw the movie. I'm like, that's the same movie as the game that I have. Can we rent it? We rented it. And I remember being very upset with the movie because the gameplay was very different than the gameplay in the NES game, not realizing that. It's actually Nintendo's fault. Their gameplay was different than the movie.
Yeah, because it came out after. Yeah.
But
mentioned that in Wikipedia about the when they tried to come out with the video game and it was different.
Like nothing to do with it. But as a kid, I'm like, well, I played this game first, so clearly it must be the movie must have been inspired by the game, not the other way around.
That's how I was growing up. We watched a ton of black and white films off VHS that my grandmother recorded off cable television.
Right.
No idea. I just thought, oh, wow, this one's in color. Cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. No idea. Those guys, many of them weren't even still alive at the time watching some of the classic films. So I feel you. I feel you. Yeah, that was a revelational day for me when my dad said, yeah, son, John Wayne passed away. What?
What?
Yeah,
he's dead. What?
He didn't come back to the Knicks.
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, my world just. You're telling me Humphrey Bogart's gone, too? Yes, son. Oh, crying out loud. You know, all in one day. It was my world shattered.
That's a rough day. But you said, oh, my gosh, and this leads me to. And I only say that because a lot of the characters use the words like, oh, my gosh, golly gee, darn it.
Right. Yes. But
how did we feel about how did you feel about the characters overall? Was there a standout to you?
Well, I
favorite.
You want to go, Brian, or you want me to go?
Oh, you go.
Okay. These are pretty much 1980s character. I mean, the guy who wants more, his friends who want less, his pretty girlfriend who supports him, his kid brother that's annoying, his loving and supporting mom who wants it the best, the neighbors that believe in him. I mean, it's all right there. But to me, of course, the standout character is Robert Preston as Centauri. He was just a joy to watch him. And he did the same thing. He's trying to sell folks on something they don't need or they don't believe in. Come on, 76 trombones. Really? Who needs 76 trombones? But it was a joy and it was really great. And also, and I've never forgotten this from the very first time I saw the film, the little brother, Lewis, when he's pulling out his Playboys and he pulls out the one issue he loves the most and he says, Yolanda, baby. It's still the best line in the whole film. But here's the funny thing, and you folks are not going to see this, but you will. We're watching the movie, and there's the early scenes where Maggie, the girlfriend, is going to go to the lake with her friends, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So she gets out her towel,
Is that the same towel?
Exactly the same towel. And Elaine, my wife, thinks like, we must have got that back in the 80s. We've had it for so long.
I think we need an honorary award from the Big Sci-Fi Podcast to Steve as the most interesting man in the world. He runs into movie stars all the time out to eat in about
just
town.
Just eating lunch, by the way.
And he's got a towel from this movie.
The towel is the same
funny.
One. Elaine had to stop the movie and go. She goes, I got to go check. Oh, my God, it's the same one.
That's actually
anyway,
cool.
Just so funny. But really, you know, there was the characters were really – there were a lot of cookie-cutter characters.
Sure.
But Robert
charming,
Preston,
though, still.
Yeah, just
charming.
Yeah. Yes, they
you
all
know,
were.
I kind of found, like, this time, I'm a huge Robert Preston as the Music Man fan.
Ugh.
He was super. He was good in a lot of films, but that mm-hmm. one is a standout, I think. Probably what he's most well-known for, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
But he was great in this movie, but I kind of felt like he didn't really fit in. Like, and maybe that was the point of it, was that he was this kind of jubilant, over-the-top, quirky character. I loved him. But it came off a little bit different for me this time. That's one thing that I remembered with great fondness, his character. And this time I didn't like it as much as I remembered.
Interesting.
But without him in this film, the film's way less interesting though, too.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly.
Because I love my favorite, the thing I always remember and look forward to the most in the movie is the first scene when he gets the record, he beats the record, and then Centauri comes and then they're driving. He's like, oh, you're going to be so surprised. You're going to love this. This is amazing. You're going to have the best time of your life. And I was just like, I just want to know what it is. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And that scene for me is a standout. So I agree. Mm-hmm. The movie would be very different without him.
Yeah. Now, my favorite character in the film is Greg. Who is his navigator.
Yeah.
And so that I had forgotten how humorous his character was written. And so that was really charming for me. And just his ha-ha, you know, and him teaching him how to, the first time they were on the Starfighter. And, you know, I liked him. I liked him the best. And can I ask you guys a question, too?
Since we're talking
characters, what else has Lance Guest, who played Alex, been in that would be of any note? Do we know? And you know what? I should just look it up, but
I didn't really look up his IMDb. I will say one thing also about characters. The Beta Alex robot, he was hilarious.
Yes.
He, especially the scene where he's taking off his head to fix it, and he turns and he says to go to sleep, Lewis, you're dreaming. But even so, he was actually the most redeeming character because he sacrificed himself at the very end to ensure that Alex would be able to complete his mission. And
that is true.
And he was, I also the interaction he had when he's trying to understand how he's supposed to have this relationship with Maggie, and he's awkward or confused or whatever, because he's not a human and he's not really this person. He's just filling in for him. So I thought that was really good.
From what I can see, as I'm looking, as I Googled his name, the last Starfighter is kind of the standout. He was in one of the Jaws sequels.
Jaws the Revenge, it looks like.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's like a popular one.
That's not one that you're going to go put on your like, hey, kids, guess what I was in? Oh, really? That one? Yeah, that one. Yeah.
It looks like that's about the biggest,
that's about
you know,
it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not unusual that some actors just have that one role, that's it, and they go back to selling insurance or who knows what, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
But then some people you look and you see they just have a list, like you look at the Dan O'Hurley who played Gerg. His list of roles that he played is remarkable, extensive. So, yeah. Not everybody is the, you know, they have their one chance. I guess their one chance at stardom.
And I thought he was great. I totally
think he did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was going to say one thing when you mentioned, we talked about Greg, like he had one of the best lines of the movie, which felt like out of place only because the joke felt like it was more modern than the rest of the movie, where it was like, oh, what are we going to do? Don't worry. I'll have it all figured out by the time we get to the frontier.
Oh, yes.
Okay, great. What's that beeping? We're at the frontier. And I'm like, right. That's like such a perfect, like a joke that I feel like would fit really well today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
More that so could, than the other jokes. Mm-hmm.
I could see that flying good in a Star Trek film, a Star Wars film.
Yes, anything.
You know, Stargate, Babylon 5, like that joke would work. And of course, the actor did it so beautifully. Mm-hmm.
It was, did it really well. And it was fun because
I choked on my drink. I remember I was drinking as that came, and that about made it come out of my mouth. That's a great scene.
If you can do a spit take, it's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Right?
I think, he was great because he was funny, but he also was able to play, like, shift between being hilarious, but also being a really good mentor towards Alex and helping Alex, you know, find his potential.
I loved the when he comes at the end of the film and meets all the whole trailer park. I thought that was kind of a fun scene too.
Also, for the three members of the Big Sci-Fi Podcast around tonight, the society that lived on Rylos, all bald, as you recall. Yes, so I feel like we have a kinship with the characters in it.
Yeah. Well, at least two of us.
I hate to say it. Hey, Brian, you're catching up. The race is on, sir. Yeah.
But you alternate because you've done bald and you've rocked bald before, I feel like.
Oh, thanks, my friend. You guys
I remember you doing that recently.
I did this past year at least once, and then I do have receding front hairline. Yes. And I do have a patch in the back, but that's getting treated with some Rogaine, baby. So we'll see. When it comes time for Trek Long Island, we'll see how that patch in the back is going. So anyways, I digress. I thought also the Xur, the main bad guy, baldy guy was fun. I mean, over the top, ridiculous.
Oh, it's over the top.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved how the other aliens on that ship were like, can we get rid of this fool? Can we be done with him? You know?
So, yeah, Brian, this is also a Steve question, but so more so a Brian question. Mm-hmm. But Brian, did you get Jem Hadar vibes a little bit?
Oh, a little bit, yeah, especially with the thing that the piece of glass that they were looking through, which the Jem Hadar used on their ships.
Mm-hmm. That too, but there's also okay. This is a very specific episode, but there's an episode DS9 where the Defiant gets captured by the Jem Hadar, and O'Brien and a bunch of them are in a shuttlecraft, or sorry, a runabout, and they shrunk, and so they're like flying around the ship.
Yeah.
But like the Jem Hadar, like the two head guys, we're sort of having a beef with each other in that episode where the one guy was like, you're being a fool. You're being really dumb. And that felt like this conversation where this guy's an idiot, but we just have to like bide our time.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think the name of that episode was actually Little Ship. They were
creative
with the name of that. Ridiculous, but fun episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah,
that was the most I ever rolled my eyes. But then I watched it and I was like, you know what? Like, it's okay.
It's actually pretty
supposed
enjoyable.
To be a little cheesy. Like they're doing this tongue in cheek for sure. So anyways, but yeah, you're right. I did not, again, when I watched this as a young lad, remember the humor in that main ship of the bad guys. That was going, I don't remember that at all. I remember just going, man, I hope these bad guys get beat, you know, like they deserve to go.
Yeah, well, that's why I love the very last line. And I even said it before he says it. What are we supposed to do? We die.
Yes.
I mean, I love it. That was really
good. And his little visor thing flips shot before he's, you know. It's almost Riker-esque, where the camera flies over to Riker and he goes, fire, you know.
Okay,
yeah, it's almost that.
I love it.
Yeah, no, and I actually like those aliens. Those villains were very well done.
Yeah,
and
they weren't bad.
And Xurg, he was a sniveling little snot that you just want to slap his little face because he's obnoxious. Well, yes, the scepter looks like something out of a bad one from Game of Thrones or something like that, you know? I mean, if you think about it, you go back to Star Trek Nemesis and you go, you know, here's this one character who doesn't fit in amongst all the rest. And they're only using him for what they need for him. And, you know, at the end.
I felt like the other, I guess they were using Shinjan. Yeah, that's true to some degree. But that's a whole other.
That's another thing. Yeah, we already did. We already talked about
that
movie.
Watch our Star Trek Nemesis episode, folks.
Yeah, yeah. You'll understand what we're talking about.
I guess we can jump to two Trek. Did you recognize there's two people?
I did not. I could not find them.
Did you recognize?
Really? Oh, you couldn't.
Did you recognize? So,
Grandma.
Yeah,
Grandma,
I was going to say, did you recognize the grandmother?
I knew her right away. I looked at her face and I'm going, why is that face familiar? Yep. And I went, oh my God, is that going back to the cage?
Yeah.
And I had to go check and she was the keeper.
Oh my God.
That's what this is called, right?
Yeah.
So there's the keeper. And then did you recognize the alien assassin?
Who was
when
that? Was that one I didn't
form?
Get.
When he was in his human form. No.
Yeah, before he gets a certain Gul Dukat.
No Mark, way.
Yeah.
Who was that?
I'm looking that up right now.
Who was
Gul Dukat? Bill was like, oh, yeah, you can see it in the eyes.
I did not register.
I don't know if I believe you, Chris.
But, you know, there was one other.
I'm looking it up.
Okay, but there was also one more Star Trek actor that was in the film.
Oh, there was another. Ooh.
Will Wheaton. He got a screen credit, but they cut his scenes from the film.
They were never in.
But we're watching the credits at the end, and the very last one listed is Will Wheaton, Lewis's friend. And we're going, what? Where? What? When?
I don't remember
him in it.
Oh, Mark Alamo, Hitchhiker is what I found him.
Yeah, because he's the hitchhiker, but then he goes to the arcade, and then it reveals his alien form.
Yeah. My goodness, I can't believe I missed that.
Because every time I watch the movie, I'm like, oh my gosh, I forget. And then I remember, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Gul Dukat.
It's funny. All I can think about was just the alien in the makeup. And I didn't think about, I forgot about the human form character at the very beginning. So yeah, very good.
They don't explain it like super well. Like, okay, why is it because the machine's turning him into an alien? But it's like, no, it's. The machine reveals his alien form.
Yes, exactly.
And those aliens are worse shots with their laser guns than stormtroopers are, too. They couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, let alone it's terrible. But it was fun. It was still fun. I'm not complaining.
Yes.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to think of what else are we... So music? Were there any logic-ish... Oh, yeah, you know, if you want to go to score, we can go to the score.
We'll do it at the very end.
Okay.
But yeah, you asked the question, were there any logic issues with this film?
Yeah, any logic issues.
And I said, where do I start? No. There are none because this isn't a logical film. It's based on emotion. Good over evil. One man against an armada. An entire force of the gun stars. I mean, you've got this force and they're all annihilated. Mm-hmm. In one shot, so that it's just left over to have one person left over, and he has the only prototype with a thing called the who came up with the idea of the Death Blossom?
I think it's the Death Blossom.
I believe that's what they serve at Outback.
Yeah,
it's
exactly
that deep
right.
fried onion is the Death Blossom based
Delicious.
On the number
onion.
Of calories yes. it has, maybe.
Ooh.
But it was silly that it could just wipe out the entire force. But that's okay because they wanted to get the movie over with.
Right.
And
they had to do something. So logic, I mean, we could nitpick it, but I think I love the spirit of Steve's answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's based off a video game. This is so quirky and fun. And it's one of those films you can just sit back. And I think you kind of get the impression right away as they're working through the trailer park.
Mm-hmm.
You know, developing that and just showing us some of the characters there, that this is just going to be a laid back film that's going to kind of be serious, but not really. And it was fun to just sit back and have fun and just let loose and be okay with the thing, be okay with the very old looking CGI outer space effects, be okay with some of the quirkiness of it because it has so much charm. So we could, I mean, you could say like it's crazy he could ever be able to go and do what he did. That his girlfriend would go with him at the end of the film.
Yes,
that's probably the, you know, that he would ask her to do that. But again, I would do anything for love, but I wouldn't do that for sure. Like because I'd,
I wanted to get your opinion on this because I feel like we don't know how long it actually takes them to get to Rylos. But I'm like, based on how quickly they were able to go back and forth, I'm like, I feel like that's like, what, a 30-minute drive? There's no need for her to go with him to Rylos because like they can just commute. Just
come back, yeah.
Because I'm trying to think, like, the first time, okay, it's like, I don't know what time it is at night, but it's at nighttime.
Yep.
Centauri, he beats the, gets the high score. Centauri comes. They fly off to Rylos. Mm-hmm. He does the thing. He's like, I want to go back. So they go, mm-hmm. they fly back from Rylos to Earth, lands in the trailer park. He goes home, hangs out a little bit. Aliens show up causing a ruckus. Centauri comes back. And then they, no, you know what? That's not right. I'm sorry. He does go back. I think it's, he comes back in the next day. So maybe it is more of a lengthy drive.
Yeah. Or, you know, if we're talking now that as you were talking, Chris, it gave me time to process a little bit. One of the logic, if there's another glaring issue in this film, if we want to be talk about it, is the android. What was his name again? The Beta.
Oh, he was Beta. Beta Alex.
Beta.
When he's under the covers, like,
oh yeah,
they did not explain why he had to form into. Why couldn't he just be an exact replica immediately? Did they explain why he was transforming? And they, I think it was just for that gross out moment where you think you're exactly going to see his face, Alex's face, and then it's this weird thing forming, mm-hmm. and you see the eyeball sticking out and everything.
Yeah, especially with the little, like, he gets it in the car and there's a little zap, and that's like the triggering of the, who knows, the DNA development or something. It was, it wasn't very, I hate to use the term, it wasn't very fleshed out.
Yeah,
right. And again, sorry. That's okay. I mean, you know.
See, I was okay with that. What bothered me more, and I guess that was part of the charm, and it was meant to be more humorous, is that, okay, they had this great technology called the beta units, a very common thing that they use. But it's like nobody thought, hey, we should also maybe try and like not just duplicate his DNA, but like maybe try and duplicate his experiences just so that the beta unit be able to interact in a believable way.
Even this, you're right. And then like, also his hair was different.
Oh yeah, the hair was different.
Clearly, noticeably different.
Yeah,
like nobody went, dude. Why does your hair? What are you using? New shampoo or what? It looks fuller. It looks a little. You know, it was. And so I wonder if that was like on purpose to differentiate. Maybe they thought they had to for filmgoers to know for sure he was different than Alex, or maybe it's just when they shot that stuff. They had a different hair designer that day.
Yeah,
that
considering they would have shot the scenes at different times, whatever. Yeah, right. You're probably right. Yeah, yeah.
That's real nitpicky, though. But
that's okay. It's very nitpicky, but it's like it's fun. But it's like we're not nitpicking because we don't like it. It's like one of those, you know, we're actually enjoying it.
Oh, we've nitpicked our beloved Trek way harder than nitpicking this film.
Oh, yes. But then that's okay because we expect the best. We expect greatness from it, and when it falls short, it's a little disappointing. Much like the sets they had on Rylos.
Yeah,
they definitely look like something right out of Trek from 1996. No, excuse me, 1966. Pardon me, folks. I mean, they looked like they were cardboard cutouts. They had the jelly bean lights. They were very. It didn't seem as befitting of what could be done, considering where they are with interior shots of other spacecraft and things like that. It just, or societies, it just didn't come across as well. So that was kind of like, it was a little too cheesy on their sets and everything.
See, I found that okay. I didn't have a problem with the sets Like, I thought it was fine. So there was two interesting things. One, I don't even know what it's called. I have to probably find the name of this. And it's really hard to describe because this is an audio podcast. But there's a device that they go up to that, what's the navigator's name again? Grig. That Alex and Grig go up to. It's like, it's a large thing. It has like these glowing red lights, and it's like two long tubes with flashing with red lights.
Okay.
And those appear in Trek, and they, like, the joke is that nobody knows what they actually do, and they just appear in most of sci-fi. Mm-hmm. It's like this prop that just gets recycled. The other thing about not so much the sets, but that wasn't so believable, is that they knock out most of that space, but then when they land, it's like, oh yeah, no, it's just the middle part that was destroyed. Yes. Everything else is intact.
Right, exactly. But it didn't
it's
seem
intact. It's all good.
And if I had to describe the sets in one word, Chris and Steve, it was going to be cardboard.
Yeah,
definitely cardboard lights. And it just didn't look advanced enough, like you said, for me to. It was just
what I did like was the fact that the car had California plates.
Oh, did
and
it? Really?
They were personalized. I like that. That was a nice touch.
Okay, we have to talk about the car. Does the car seem very familiar?
The like front end of it does.
To another sci-fi movie that maybe aged a little bit better.
Right. Which was first, Back to the Future or this?
I think this might have been first. I think this was 84,
seems
right?
Like this would be
Back
first.
To the Future was 85.
Okay. So it's the other, maybe Back to the Future said, oh, we kind of like that. What do we got?
Yeah.
What
I was wondering about that because it's just like interesting.
It's like the minivan version of the DeLorean.
Yes.
DeLorean.
Oh, definitely the minivan version.
And I mean, it kind of made me think of the next gen shuttlecraft a little bit too, just a little bit sleeker and smaller, just the general shape of it kind of reminded me of that too.
Yeah.
I could see that a little bit. Yeah.
No, it had that Sid Mead sort of look to it. Very futuristic. If you think, yes, Blade Runner, much better special effects and better so on and so forth, but it still had that going for something that looked conventional or really believable, but also was futuristic where the wheels fold in and the whole thing turns into a spaceship. And then, of course, we don't know what its propulsion system is or how it's able to do that. It just we just accept and move on so the story can get to a certain point.
We should start a write-in campaign. Pick the production company of our choice and say, you guys should develop a Last Starfighter TV series. What would that look like?
Oh, we got to do this. I want to do this.
Answer me this, fellas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The stupid glass window between the front seat and the cabin of that car. What was that about? The glass separating them. Remember that
all the best limousines have that. You're right.
You know what? Here's the non-canon answer. Centauri, he's been hanging around Earth for a very long time. He's been hanging up all the major cities, so he's had a lot of time in New York. And is like, you know what? I've seen some things in New York. Let me get the. I've been in New York cabs. Let me put that up.
That's why there's a glass.
Wonder if it's a smell thing too. That was my first thought. Was he's maybe Earthling smelled weird to me. So I don't know. Yeah. But
it was a bit like, okay, that's a little much, you know?
Let's get to Brian's favorite discussion point, the music.
Okay, I thought you were going to say food, but it's music. Yeah. Okay. So I think the music in this film is just fine.
That's it? No,
I think I'm not going to seek it out to listen to it. Unless maybe the main theme I might add to a playlist. I might do that. But the music serves the film well, I thought. And it wasn't like The Black Hole, which we recently discussed, that had, the music was fine up until a certain point when the real action started. And then it was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Just trying too hard here and getting in the way and being too noticeable, So I felt as I was watching it, because I knew we'd have this part of the discussion, My thoughts is I think the main theme is memorable enough and fun. I don't know if I'd call it classic. It's nowhere on the level of the motion picture theme, next gen theme, or Star Wars theme, you know, and all that, or Indiana Jones or anything like that. But it's memorable, and I think it's fun, and it really serves the adventurous spirit of this film well. And so I was happy with it. I was like, oh man, yeah, okay, this is good. It didn't get in the way. And that's the main thing for me with film scores. If you're noticing the music to the point of it's almost distracting, then the composer hasn't, or the direct, you know, the mixing, whatever it is off. You know, so there.
To me, I wrote down, it has a nice military style to it. It's not memorable. But the thing was, is that it wasn't memorable. And so yesterday I was cleaning and I said, you know something, I'm just going to put the soundtrack on my phone. And I listened to it. I'm going, you know, it's better than I thought it was, because it did have, there were points where it drops down when Alex is contemplating what he's going to do. He wants to go to college, but he can't go to the college because he didn't get accepted. He doesn't have the money, whatever the story. And the music takes kind of a whimsical style. But then, you know, during the sequences, it has the battle military style to it. Even Lane said she thought it had a little bit of John Williams-esque to it.
Oh, interesting.
Not a lot, but just, you know, like she says, that could have been an Indiana Jones. That could have possibly been in that. Yeah.
It's like you're walking through a store and someone just tried out the perfume and you just walk through it and get the essence of it.
Exactly.
The full flavor.
That's good. That's good. What did you think, Christopher?
Chris? Sort of the same thing, where it's like the most of the score isn't that memorable, but I did like the main theme, and it was stuck in my head for quite a while afterwards, but now I can't remember it. So now I think I might have to go and listen to it again.
I could not hum it to you, but I can remember how I felt.
Yeah.
And maybe I will look it up on Spotify sometime later this week. And just,
I did it on YouTube. It was right there. Yeah. You can just easy to find on YouTube, and they got the whole score there. So yeah, but it again, it served its purpose. It wasn't, you said, it wasn't a distraction. It wasn't annoying, or it's, you know, it, you know, overshot the scene or whatever it was. So yeah, it did its job.
Yep.
It did its job.
Yeah. I think it's like, it did its job. It was sort of memorable, but it wasn't in the way. I think they did a good job with that. Any like final thoughts about The Last Starfighter before we wrap up?
I'm happy to have to rediscover a film that I would feel totally safe letting my kids watch if they should ever say, want to watch a film like this. Because that's becoming rarer these days as far as films that I would want to watch and enjoy too. If we're not talking Disney type stuff, you know. My son and I just recently watched, this is kind of a side note, so I'm happy about that, but I was also pleasantly surprised. We recently rewatched The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker all in one day. The girls were off on a girls' day, so we're doing our thing. And that's one thing he wanted to do. And I'm way less critical of those two films than I was when I saw them. I think they're way better than I remembered. And you know, and those were PG-13, I think.
Yeah. I don't think they were too like bad in terms of, because they were Star Wars. So it was like,
there's some pretty intense stuff, especially The Rise of Skywalker with Palpatine. Scenes were pretty dark and all that, but you know, we loved it and we watched it together. And this is a film I think that both of my kids would find enjoyment from. And that as a parent, I'd go, yeah, there's really not much. Yeah, nothing to worry about in this. So I like that. And I like that they just kind of went for it in this film and told this fun story, this whimsical story. And there's no apologies for it. It just is what it is. And it's fun and sweet. And there are memorable things in it. Some of the jokes, you know, and memorable performances too, frankly. Yeah. So I give this two thumbs up. I don't know if you're going to ask us to rate it or not, but
I mean, I can if you guys want to rate it. But
we can go with the Donahue 1 to 5 at some point.
Go ahead. I was
going to just say, to me, you know what I love most about the film?
What?
The scenes on Earth.
Oh, okay.
Where he's interacting with his family, interacting with his girls, or the, you know, the beta units there, or how he deals with his situation.
Yeah.
I think it was very sweet. It was very, very real. Even though, even if there was no amazing adventure in outer space, and the kid just did something that he, you know, just think about all of us. That isn't there one thing that you've done in your life that's better than everybody else, or you, you know, and you stood out, and for that one shining moment, you're like, hey, you know what? I'm the best at this. And that's what was really the charm in him winning the game, because it showed that even though he wasn't going to get everything he wanted in life, he did get one thing with a quarter of being the best at something. And that's pretty, that's to me, that was enjoyable. It really was.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's one of those where, it's unapologetic. It's cheesy, but it's fun. It tells a good story. And at the end of the day, it has a good message and it has heart, which I think is all you can really ask for when watching a movie, especially nowadays.
Right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I mean, that's just it. And you said there, you know, when you're looking back films that we have reviewed from the late 70s and the early 80s, and there is a level of disappointment we've had in a lot of them, either in the story, the effects, or whatever. I mean, comparing this to Explorers, this is a much more enjoyable film than Explorers.
Definitely.
Because I think there's a little more sweetness to it. In that movie, it just kind of went off the rails at the end. And this kind of, but not as bad, because he, again, is the hero at the end of the story and saves the day. And isn't that what everyone wants in a film?
Right.
Yeah. And it completes the film. It wraps up the storylines. You start off the storylines. What's he going to do in the future? You have all these questions. How is he going to be with his, you know, his girlfriend? And it's like, no, they resolved it at the end. So it's a nice complete story.
Even Granny says, go, go, go. You know, it's like, you know, she doesn't want him to hang her to hang around just because she's old or whatever. And, you know, you mentioned about you saying some production company. I believe I saw on Wikipedia that they were attempting to have either a remake of this film or a TV series, something, but it's just never happened. And I think that if they were to take the story and update the graphics and update the story, and I think it would could be a great remake. Yeah,
I think we got to try to
interesting.
Make, we got to figure this out off air, because I feel like we have like two or three movies that we now want to try and remake, or at least come up with the screenplay for one day. Right, we'll see.
Right. Maybe our budding filmmaker right here, Mr. Chris Fox, will be.
Yes,
that's tempting. His...
I've got a tremendous amount of old model kits in the garage. I can build you anything you want out of a spaceship, and it'll be three dimensional.
Chris, maybe you need to hook up with our friend Jeffrey Morris, and see if you guys together can put together a Last Starfighter.
I think project. That sounds like. If he feels as strongly about the Gunstar as he does about the Eagle, then yes, I think it could happen.
Right.
Yeah. So that'd be cool.
I would rate this film, okay? And I'm going to give this a very enthusiastic from 1 to 5 stars. I'm going to give it a very solid, enthusiastic 3 stars.
Okay.
And I say that with. You know, it's just not a 5-star. I don't think it's quite a 4-star.
I don't think it's a 5-star.
Very enjoyable 3-star film. You know, because there are plenty of, not that this was a B movie by any means when it came out. There are plenty of B movies that I love that are just, you know, made on the cheap that are fantastic. This was not made on the cheap for its time, but you know what I mean. So I think it's a very enthusiastic 3 stars. I would watch this again.
I agree with you, Brian. I would give it 3 solid stars. The movie cost $15 million to make. I think it said it made about $30 million. So it was kind of a disappointment for, you know, return for cost. But, you know, it's one of those films that probably still has legs.
yeah, mm-hmm.
in the years that have gone by, that that people who haven't seen it will look at it with nostalgia, and their new your kids will watch it and they'll go, well, this is pretty cheaply made, but you can explain it, what was going yeah. on at the time. But still, what it, you know, what's the story? What's the characters? Are they likable? Do you trust them? Do you believe in them? Do you like, you know, and if they fit all that, it's a good film. It's a good movie.
It was so charming. It was so easy to overlook how outdated the mm-hmm. effects seemed. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's good filmmaking, and, mm-hmm. you know, because not everything is going to look like it does today. It's not going to be in super HD, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it's, the, you know, there's going to be differences in quality. And, but it's, I think this film, I hope people hear us talk about it, Chris, and go and watch yeah, it again, or maybe for the first time. Maybe there'll be yeah, fans exactly. that'll see it for the first time.
That we, that's the nice thing. I hope that we, you know, we've said this many times, watch it yourself.
Yeah.
Make your own decision, and please share them with us mm-hmm. on our Facebook page, our email address, wherever, you know, yeah. share us what you think of The Last Starfighter.
What about, I want to know what Chris would rate it too.
Yes, this is hard because I think I got to just stick with you guys. I think an enthusiastic 3 stars wow. is probably good.
Mm-hmm. Because, this might be like, the first time. Now, Adina's not here.
No.
But this is the first time we've had any type of rating it the same star.
Yeah, because yeah. usually I go a little bit higher. But yeah, I think probably yeah. 3.5 or 3, an enthusiastic 3 to me seems reasonable yeah. because yeah. I like the movie a lot, mm-hmm. But probably not enough to give it a 4. But something that yeah. I go back to every few years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I enjoy it. I think, yeah, definitely check this out if you're looking mm-hmm. for something fun, something a little bit cheesy.
Yeah.
You just want to kick back and relax, order a pizza, and,
right.
and just hang out with.
Yeah, and just relax as you watch it. Don't mm-hmm. don't overly judge it or hard. Just have fun with it. Take it for the spirits it's intended to be, you know, received in. And I would also put this, like, well, sometimes we talk about, is this a must-watch sci-fi film? Should this be in your vocabulary or whatever the term Adina uses for science fiction?
Mm-hmm.
I would say, I don't know if it's a must-watch, but I think it's worth watching if you're a sci-fi fan.
Yeah, it's
fan.
Worth watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this definitely. Is not the day the Earth stood still.
No.
This is
no.
not mm-hmm. Forbidden Planet, and you're looking films that were from 30 years before it.
Right.
But it, as an 80s film, it's yeah, very good.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can find cheesiness in Back to the Future, but it has the charm mm-hmm. that you love about the movie. And mm-hmm. that's really what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Right. I think pretty good glowing endorsement from the Big Sci-Fi Podcast.
Yes.
Well, thank you guys for another great episode and great discussion. And remember, everyone, stay safe, watch some sci-fi. And you know what? If some guy is supposed to hang out with you but can't because he has to go hang out with his parents and do some stuff, some chores around the house, let him be. You know, don't make him feel bad.
Yes.
And with that, we'll see you next time.